All right. Happy Friday. It is Friday, December 9th, 2016. Welcome to episode 3 of The Drop Set. I'm your host, Darren Starr. It hasn't been too long since episode 2, actually, but it occurred to me that Fridays are actually a really good day to sit down and record these. So I figured I would start that habit here, and we just get off to a blazing start, 3 episodes in like the first 8 or 9 days here. So why not? What's new since the last episode? What was that? Monday? Tuesday? Can't remember. I think it was Tuesday. Not much is new. So there you go. I did have a revision, or actually an addendum to episode 2's discussion, and we were talking about macros and using MyFitnessPal, etc. One thing that I forgot about, because I'd already done this, was when you are in the diary section there and you're looking at like meal 1, meal 2, etc. Under each particular meal, there's the line where it says add food, and then there's the 3 dots off to the right-hand side where that kind of indicates, hey, there's more options here. If you hit that, there's an option that says turn on smart copy, and you should do that for all 6 meals in here, just because why that feature is not on by default, I have no idea. I think it might be on by default for meal 1, but that's it. What that lets you do is just smart copy means if you have it enabled and you just swipe from left to right on each meal, it just brings it in from the previous day with no changes. And then you can go in and make changes if you want, but if you find yourself eating the same meals pretty consistently from one day to the next, that really automates a lot of it for you. So I highly recommend doing that and turning that on before you get started here. And I just wanted to touch on that before we get rolling in episode 3. So what do we have on the agenda for episode 3? We're going to go over a little Q&A. I got some questions from people that I wanted to address. And then we're going to talk about do's and don'ts of contest prep. Some of these are, it's really kind of like big picture. It's not like, you know, don't cut your carbs too soon or something like that. We're not talking about the nitty-gritty details, but more big picture things. Again, kind of geared towards somebody who's maybe considering doing this for the first time, or if you've competed once or twice or 3 times and you're not seeing the kind of success or show-to-show improvement that you would really like to see, maybe you should take a step back, consider some of these do's and don'ts. So we'll cover that in the latter part of the show here. So The first question I wanted to address is regarding gloves. Somebody says, you know, people come up to me all the time and say I should use gloves. I'll get a better grip on things. What do you think? Should I do that? The answer is absolutely effing not. No. Gloves are going to do one thing. They're going to protect the skin on your hands, and that is it. As far as grip, they actually worsen your grip because you hold things with your hands, and if you put a layer of material between your hands and the thing you are trying to hold, you have less of a direct contact there, so it does not improve your grip. And really, your grip comes from strength in your fingers and your forearms. Gloves aren't going to help with that at all. So the only thing that they will do is prevent calluses, and prevent, you know, your skin from getting, you know, irritated. And to that I would say, really? I mean, get over it already. Come on. If you're a bodybuilder, you're in the gym most days, more often than not. Just suck it up. Get some calluses already. It's a battle scar. It builds character, puts hair on your chest, yada, 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 all that good stuff. I really am a firm believer in being connected with the stuff that you're doing in the gym, which means, you know, when you're squatting, when you're deadlifting, feeling the floor. That does not necessarily mean go barefoot, but it means, you know, take off the shock absorbent shoes. You know, I mean, if you're wearing that kind of crap to the gym, you know, be connected with your surface. Don't use a bar pad when you squat, for the love of God, please. Don't use gloves. You know, be more connected with the stuff that you're doing now, with the equipment that you're using. Now, that being said, I am, and this is going to seem maybe hypocritical or contradictory, I am a huge fan of lifting straps, and to some degree also wrist wraps. So let's make sure we know what we're talking about here. Lifting straps are just a simple piece of fabric with a loop in it. You put one into the loop, one in through the loop, and then you put your wrist around that, and then you use that and wrap it around the bar or dumbbell or handle or whatever you're using, and that will help with your grip. The reason I like that is because training your grip and having a strong grip is fine. I do not want my grip to be the limiting factor on pulling exercises, meaning I don't want to lose out on potential back development and leave those couple reps on the table just because I can't hold on to the effing bar anymore. So lifting straps are extremely useful for that. So they can be used on anything where you're pulling or holding something. I would say maybe not if you're doing a farmer's walk, because the point of that is to kind of work your grip there. But if you're doing a Romanian deadlift, pretty much any back exercise, any kind of a row, any kind of a pull down, even a pull up, they can be really useful for that. The idea being you want to work the muscles to fatigue, to exhaustion, and a little bit beyond. And having to worry about your grip strength giving out is just one more thing that you don't want to. It could be just too much to worry about. And if we can take one thing off the table, one less thing for your brain to worry about, great, let's do that. Wrist wraps, this provides stability and support to the wrist when it's in flexion. So think about a bench press, an overhead press, something like that, where your wrist is bent backwards and you're supporting a heavy compressive load through the forearm on it. So as for me, I had a tragic landscaping accident about, I don't know, about 13 years ago or something like that. It's kind of funny. I was using a gas-powered auger to dig holes for a fence and hit a tree root, and the thing yanked out of my hand, and that sucker, it swole up to like the size of a turkey. It was ridiculous. I got it x-rayed, and they said, no, everything's fine, and nothing was broken, but it's just never felt the same. And when I do heavy benching or heavy overhead press, if it's unsupported, I will definitely feel it in my right hand, right wrist. If I hold it right now and I just move my fingers, I can kind of feel it click a little bit. Just something isn't right there. It doesn't show up on any scans, but something ain't right. So, if you have weak wrists or some types of injury and you just having some compression around the wrist to provide a little bit of support gives you some relief, great. Wrist wraps are useful there. Those are the only exercises, though, just any kind of pressing movement where the wrist is bent back like that. Another question, this actually came from a client of mine, Shannon, who is a powerlifter, and she was looking at, you know, what are the differences between various organizations, drug tested, not drug tested, etc. And I thought it'd be good just to have a overarching discussion about that topic as it relates, you know, it can be universally applied to bodybuilding and powerlifting. So you've got a lot of organizations, you know, we'll avoid the specifics of all of them because there are a lot for powerlifting, there are a lot for bodybuilding. But thinking about, you know, a drug-tested show versus a non-tested show. So you might think it's kind of an easy call. Like, what should I do? Am I a drug user? Okay, great. I'm going to do a non-tested show. Am I a natural? Great. I'm going to do a tested show. Maybe. I would say the first part of that, absolutely. If you are what I will refer to as an enhanced athlete, and you think about doing a natural show, you should just punch yourself in the face right now because you deserve it. So stop thinking that and just don't even consider it anymore. As far as a natural going into a non-tested show, I will say there are a lot more non-tested shows than there are tested shows. So you're going to have a lot more options if you open yourself up to competing on a non-level playing field. Now, just because people are using performance-enhancing drugs doesn't automatically make them better. I've seen plenty of naturals that could wipe the floor with somebody who is using drugs. So it's not an automatic disqualifier. So a lot of people don't necessarily want to compete on that playing field. They're like, hey, I'm a natural. I don't want to compete against people that are using. Okay, great. Don't. Nobody's forcing you. I will say that the non-tested shows, typically, in my experience, this is not universal, but typically, they are going to be bigger. They're going to have, and I don't just mean the people in them, like the show itself will be larger. Typically they're going to have a little bit more production value behind them. They will often be in a slightly nicer facility. And so if those kind of things are important to you, and there's certainly nothing wrong with considering those things important, My take on it is, you know, if I'm doing this, if I'm going to go and compete and invest the time in getting ready and invest the money and send that to a promoter to go and be in a show and get up on stage, I would kind of like it to be a nice production and I would like it to be a big, well-run show. Now, maybe you want a smaller show. Okay, that's fine too. But just knowing, you know, for me, I struggle with the idea of going through the whole process of contest prep and killing myself and then going and competing on a stage at a middle school auditorium somewhere. You know, I mean, it's just like, wow, really? This is what we're doing? Okay, I guess this is what we're doing. Versus going to, you know, a large, you know, public theater or a convention hall or something like that where there's a more, you know, there's actually like a light show, there's a sound system, et cetera. I mean, it's a little bit more elaborate. There's a little bit more pomp and circumstance involved, and it feels like more of a production. You know, there's a dedicated space to get ready, all that kind of stuff. It's not like you're walking out on a stage that's really just like an 8-inch platform riser with a temporary black curtain behind it, you know, with some sponsor logos on it. Like, tacky. You know, if I'm going through the process, I want something a little bit more than that. So those are things to consider. The big question, though, is, you know, how do you feel about potentially not competing on a level playing field? And if that's a non-starter for you, great, go the natural route. If you're open to it, cool, you have a lot more options. Now you can look at what's in your area. If you go to naturalbodybuildingevents.com, they're sorted out by state there. You can click on your state and states that are within a reasonable driving distance from you. You can also look at the Google NPC and the name of your state and see if, you know, most states they have an NPC website for their state that will list shows. Some of them, I mean, boy, I got to tell you, when it comes to bodybuilding website design, I think it's still like 1997 out there. Time has not been kind. A lot of the sites are really dated. They still look like somebody like opened up Notepad and just started typing HTML code in there and then saved it and put that up on a website. So, and a lot of state NPC organizations and other organizations, they don't even have a website. I don't know necessarily how they get the word out. You can also look for Facebook groups. You know, when I'm helping a client research show options, it's pretty involved because I have to figure out, okay, what's your acceptable travel radius? Are we looking for a natural show, a non-tested show, or any? Then I start the process of looking state by state for all of the appropriate organizations and hitting all the websites that I have in my bookmark list. So it's involved. But anyway, so that's it. One thing, and this was not a direct question from somebody, but it's something that comes up a lot. I would say almost every time I work with a client who's preparing for a show, and it's just a question of overall readiness. Am I gonna be ready for this show? How will I know when I'm ready? Or the worst, I'm not ready. And boy, let me tell you, I hate hearing that when we're like 16 weeks out. Like, of course you're not fucking ready. We got 16 weeks still to go. Jesus, you got to give it some time. Give the process some time. Here's the thing: for your first show, you will have no way to know if you are ready until it happens. You know, if you ask me or your coach, am I going to be ready? And whatever I or your coach says isn't going to mean anything until you get up on stage. You know, because there's always going to be that thought in the back of your head like, well, he says I'm ready, but I just don't know. I don't know. I trust him, but I just don't know. And then you get up there and you can see, oh, okay, all right, I'm not competing against, you know, everybody that looks like they're at Olympia level conditioning. All right, cool. You've got to take things... You've got to accept things under the circumstances that they are presented to you in. So if it's your first show, I don't want to set the bar low necessarily, but your condition at your first show is going to be a baseline that you will then beat for your second show and then beat for your third show. The best way to address this, the whole question of readiness, is to over-prepare. So before you start the prep for your show, put in the work to build a solid base of muscle, a solid foundation, so that when you go to cut, you've got something left on your frame. It is extremely common for people to rush into contest prep for a show before they are ready to. And I talk people out of it a lot. I'm like, you're not ready. You're not ready. And you can do it and you'll do okay, but you probably won't be happy with the result that you see. You're going to get up on stage. You're going to feel good. You're going to have a good time. Then you're going to look at the photos and be like, geez, I should have waited. I should have built some more. Yeah, I know. So I always tell people, my clients, you know, I'm not a dictator. I'm not going to say, hey, if you want to do this show, that's fine. I'm not going to help you. I'm like, that's fine. I want to make sure that you're well-informed and you know what the expectations are and you know what my recommendation is. But then, you know, you're an adult and you can make your own decision. But it is impossible to put in too much time to get ready for a show. I've known people that have trained with a prep mentality for years before actually starting their pre-contest cut, you know, and that doesn't mean like, oh, I've been lifting, I've been going to the gym for 10 years. I mean, like, no, following a very precise diet, trying to build, trying to stay lean, continuing to do cardio, really being aggressive with your training, and taking a no holds barred approach for it for years before starting a pre-contest cut. You know, that could be considered excessive. In a lot of cases, it's not really necessary, but it can be helpful. And, you know, the goal is to build a better physique. The goal is not necessarily to go and win trophies. So the more time that you put in on the front end, it will pay off on the back end. All right, so there's your Q&A for December 9th. I have another segment that I want to dive into here really quickly. This will be a recurring segment. This is, boy, I wish I had a sound effects budget in here because I'd like to add some echo and some reverb on here. Maybe I'll figure out how to do that in post-production. Who knows? But this is stupid bodybuilding myths. We are all familiar with some of these. As bodybuilders, if we are smart and we like to question things that are thrown at us, we hear a lot of shit that is really, really stupid pretty consistently. And so I just wanted to touch on one of my favorite bodybuilding myths of all time here, and that is, quote, "I don't do deadlifts because they make my waist big." Have you heard this before? If you haven't, congratulations. You hang out with a smart crowd, or a crowd that doesn't talk about bodybuilding, at least. So it's very common. A lot of people think this. And, you know, the way I approach myths like this when I hear them is I just tell people, you know, my response is, really, why do you think that? And invariably, it has to do, I mean, this one, it always comes down to like, well, you know, the way that you breathe and the way that you block out your core, you know, the way your stomach can balloon up when you do it. I'm like, well, you probably aren't doing it right. But last I checked, deadlifting is an exercise that works your hamstrings, your glutes, your lower back, your middle back, your traps, and to some extent your delts. I don't think it really works your waist. And I don't really think the waist is a muscle group necessarily that you could train. So, this is one that just really doesn't pass the logic test. I think where it comes from at its root is that deadlifting is a powerlifting exercise, and powerlifters are not known for their small waists. And that has nothing to do with deadlifting and everything to do with a traditional powerlifting diet, which is eat a whole bunch of stuff and get strong. So, you know, powerlifters, traditionally, there's a phase of powerlifting now that is, I wouldn't say more concerned with aesthetics, but maintains a more balanced aesthetic, which goes contrary to this. But, you know, your old school powerlifters, they didn't care what they looked like as long as they could move the weight. So I think that's where this comes from. I don't know. If anybody else has thoughts on maybe the origins of this myth, feel free to speak up. Let me know. Shoot me an email or something, and we'll talk about it further if necessary. But no, deadlifting does not make your waist big. It will make your glutes big. It will make your back stronger. It will make your hamstrings stronger. It ain't gonna make your waist bigger. So do your deadlifts, all varieties, sumo, conventional, deficit, Romanian, you know, single leg, all that stuff. Do them. So, all right. Where are we? We are on to the meat and potatoes of the podcast now. So this is the do's and don'ts of contest prep. This is something that was suggested by Chrissy, a client of mine, and I'm not sure exactly what she was looking for on this topic, but this is where I'm going with it. So I have five things in each column here, and these are kind of, you know, big picture things. So like I alluded to in the introduction, things that we should be evaluating early on in the planning stages. That's where a lot of this stuff comes from. And some of it will apply throughout as well. But big picture stuff. So here we go. Number one, the first do of contest prep is do know why you are competing. Ask yourself, why am I competing? Is my goal, and I touched on this back in the first episode of, you know, why somebody should compete. What's a valid reason to want to compete, and what are some maybe less valid reasons to compete? So always make sure that at point blank, you're able to answer that question. Why am I competing? Is it because I want to win? And I think I touched on that before. Maybe not the most valid answer, but, you know, not totally invalid. Okay, that's fine. You just, you know, be prepared to not win every show because nobody really does. Do you want to win? Do you want to just go through and experience it? Do you want to go through the process? Do you really want to just build your physique, and competing is something periodically that you can do to help kind of, you know, maintain some level of accountability? That's all good too. Always remember why you are competing though. So that's number one. The number one, don't overreact. This could apply to a lot of things, and I mean for it to apply to all of them pretty much. So prep is it's a wild ride. Even the smoothest prep is going to have its bumps along the way. So what I like to tell my clients, you know, when it comes to overreaction is, you know, you're going to have peaks and valleys. And what we want to do is chop off the peaks and fill in the valleys a little bit to kind of smooth the ride out a little bit, which means you know, if you're targeting certain numerical milestones, like, you know, if you go through prep a few times, you're going to know, you know, we don't necessarily chase the scale, but you can expect it to move in certain increments at certain times. And you kind of watch that and you observe and see what happens. It becomes kind of predictable, assuming everything is going well. If you get a huge loss, okay, cool, but let's not overreact to that and celebrate too much just because it might not be the best news. You know, there could be some kind of weird reason for that, you know, some big drop in water retention. You know, I mean, who knows? It depends on how frequently you're weighing yourself and how big of a drop it is as far as how much concern we can have over it. But I'm like, okay, that's cool, but let's just, you know, stay the course and continue doing what we're doing here. If it's not moving, conversely, or God forbid, it actually goes up, which it will, your weight will fluctuate up and down. You can't overreact to that either. That's part of the process. That's very natural. You know, if you have a stressful job and you're forced to stay late at work a few days and you miss a couple days in the gym, okay, that sucks. And I think we all want to have priorities such that the gym doesn't really get shoved to the side. But if it happens, it happens. And until you invent a time machine, you just got to deal with that and move on. So you can't get too upset about that. You just got to roll with the punches, move on. You do your meal prep, you pack all your stuff, you walk out the door, you go to work, you get to work and you realize, oh shit, I left everything at home on the counter. I've heard that story a lot. That's fine. I mean, you know, hopefully you've got some experience with flexible dieting. You can pick up some stuff. You can kind of hodgepodge your way through the day. Is it easy? No. Is it a pain in the ass? Absolutely. Is it doable? You bet. Is it something that's worth getting really upset about and then binge eating over? No, it's not. So, I always encourage people just to try and be, you know, be a little more even-keeled about everything, basically. The next do of contest prep, do have a long-term plan. So think like, you know, oh, this is going to scare some people, but think like 10 years. You know, 10 years from now, where do you want your physique to be? And then how does doing a show 2 months help you get there? Doing a show 2 months from now, how does that help you get there? Does it? Maybe it does. Great. Maybe it doesn't. But I always say, you know, the long-term goal, you know, where you want to take yourself from a physique perspective should always be at the forefront of your mind when making decisions about what to do and how to schedule your year. So that long-term plan, it may be, you know, I want to look like Jay Cutler, or maybe I want to look like Nicole Wilkins or whatever. Great. All right. That's ambitious, but you've got a goal. Now you better be willing to, you know, put in the work to get there, and hope that you've got some good genetics too, because it's going to take that. Maybe it's, you know, I want to get a pro card in, you know, whatever organization it is. Okay, cool. Do you know the process that's involved in that? Do you know the amount of work in there? Do you know what pro card winners typically look like? Can you objectively assess yourself and see where you are now in relation to that kind of baseline pro level physique? And then can you map out what it's going to take to get you from where you are now to there? So have that long-term plan. And that could just be a goal. And then maybe you need to work with somebody to help kind of figure out how to make that goal a reality. And, you know, I've worked with people who will come at me and say, here's my goal, and this is what I want to do, and this is where I'd like to be 5 years down the road. And oftentimes I've told people, okay, that's cool. I think we can do it in less than that. I think you're underestimating, you know, how much you can actually change your body if you put in the work for it. And, you know, for some people, you know, a goal that's 5 years, some people may be able to do that in two. Some people may be able to do that in 10. Some people may never hit it. It all depends. There's a lot of individuality that goes in here. So, but do have a long-term plan. The next don't of contest prep is don't neglect your posing. This should be a regular part of your daily routine. Yes, I said daily routine. From well before you ever start contest prep. And when I say daily routine, I mean, yeah, I want you to be that jerk off who's posing in between sets during your workout. There's nothing wrong with it. Do it. You don't have to, you know, have a big blinking neon sign on your back that says, look at me when you do it. You know, you don't have to be, you know, craving attention necessarily to be this guy. But as a bodybuilder, you know, posing, it's not only so that we can see what we're doing and we can see the effect of what we're working and how it's affecting and impacting our bodies, but posing is the number one activity that we can engage in to improve mind-muscle connection. And mind-muscle connection improves exercise quality every time, every single time. And I can't tell you how many people that I've worked with that simply cannot engage and flare their lats. It is a skill that you've got to work on. And honestly, when you are working back or shoulders, you should be trying to do that in between every set until you get it right. Just work it, you know, just try and manipulate your shoulders, move them back, move them forward, try and spread them a little bit. Notice how it changes when you, you know, internally or externally rotate your arm at the shoulder a little bit, see how that changes things. You know, I'm not saying you've got to rip off your shirt and do a front double bicep shot and a most muscular pose down with the woman in the squat rack next to you or anything like that, but just kind of working and manipulating and trying to engage the muscles. That's what I mean by posing. So work that stuff in between your sets, and then, you know, always be, you know, I wouldn't say daily necessarily, but your actual quarter turns, your mandatory poses, you should be working on those at least weekly, at least, and not just when you take your progress pics. Don't just hit each pose for 10 seconds and then move on, but be able to hit each pose and hold it for like 30 seconds. That's how you build up conditioning. That's how you build stability. And that's the foundation of posing. Is stability. You don't want to be up there shaking like there's a strong breeze going across the stage, because everybody's going to see that. The judges will see that, and they will react accordingly as well. So work on that posing. The third do is do pick your shows carefully. Now this, you know, we talked about this a little bit earlier as far as, you know, a drug-tested show versus a non-tested show. That's one factor to consider. The other thing is, you know, timing. You know, what does your year look like? You know, what kind of stuff do you have going on? Because I'm pretty sure you're not just a robot that is stuck in the closet and you get pulled out for contest prep and then put back in when the show's over. You've got a life, you know, you've got a family, you've got kids, you've got job, you've got school. You know, there could be, you know, vacations involved and whatnot. What I would not recommend is you've got a summer vacation scheduled and you're going to Mexico for the first week of July. Great. Let's do a show on July 15th. That is the dictionary definition of a bad idea. Do not do that. So look at your year, look at how things are planned out, and put the show on your calendar. Once you decide, okay, you know, I've looked at this and okay, we've got this, you know, this big project at work and it ends on this date. So I definitely don't want to be trying to finish up my prep while we're still working on that project. So You know, I can still go to the gym, I can still do prep, but maybe if the show is like a month after that, that would be okay. Work around your vacations, work around trips. You know, if your kids have functions for school, if you have to, you know, anything that's going to take you out of your routine for an extended period of time is going to be difficult to plan around. Not impossible, but difficult, and should be considered when you're trying to pick a show. So, also geography is another thing to consider as well. I would not recommend, especially not for a first show, don't go someplace where you have to fly. Unless you're going there and kind of working that into a trip. If you're like going back to visit family, you're going to be staying with them and they know, okay, great. So we're going to have a good time, but I got to get my show done first and then we'll have a good time. You know, that would be okay, but try and stick to something close to home. For a first show specifically, I will usually say, you know, anything up to about a 3-hour drive, it kind of depends on your geography a little bit, would be acceptable. And for some places in the country, 3 hours, if you kind of draw a 3-hour radius map around your location on a map, you got a lot of options there. Some places, like if you're in the middle of Utah, you might have fewer options. So, you've always got to consider geography and know what the show options are, but definitely look at your calendar for the year. Kind of plan things out, see where the dead spots are, where you don't already have something, and that's a good place to think about trying to find a show to fit in there. Where are we here? Number three, the third don't of contest prep. Don't overcompensate with cardio. Corollary to that is don't fuck up on your diet. And if you do, don't feel like just doing extra cardio is the answer. What you don't want to do is bury yourself in a cardio hole early on in your prep that you can't dig out of and get to a point where you've got to do an hour and a half, 2 hours a day just to, you know, keep the scale moving south. If you do that, you know, I've seen some people succeed with that, but I've also seen way more people get burnt out from that. And doing too much cardio is, you know, the first and probably biggest cause of dropping out of a show, just because it's difficult to sustain for all but the absolute most dedicated people among us. And I would kind of put myself in that category of people that may not be able to hang with that. That's a shit ton of cardio. And, you know, I've found a way to deal with it and to accept it. But if you're looking at 2 hours a day, I might just give you a big old middle finger and say, no, thanks. Not interested in that. But, you know, I certainly don't pretend to be the most dedicated individual out there. I work hard, but, you know, I got my limits. but don't, the big picture here is don't overcompensate with cardio. Don't feel like whatever you do, whatever bad decisions you make, however you stray off plan, don't feel like you can just do more cardio and make up for it. It's a bad strategy. And, you know, if that was the way to do it, your coach would probably have you be doing that much cardio to begin with. My goal throughout contest prep, and obviously this is very relative, I always want people eating as much as possible and doing as little cardio as possible to continue to get the job done. So doing more cardio or dropping calories out, like, oh, I went overboard on my diet. Okay, great. We're going to drop out 500 calories a day. No, we're not. We're not doing that. We're not overreacting. That goes back to another thing that we said. So don't try and overcompensate with cardio just because you didn't follow the plan perfectly. Whoever your coach is, talk to them, see what you should do. If there's any kind of compensation that they want to make, any kind of adjustment, cool. If you're coaching yourself, I would encourage restraint and try not to overdo it by assigning yourself a whole bunch of additional cardio to try and make up for it. The fourth do of contest prep is do be objective. That means having the ability to look at yourself fairly and with an emotionally detached pair of eyes. So that means looking at yourself in the mirror, also looking at your photos, which of course you are taking, right? Looking at your photos and not just being filled with self-hate. Be like, oh God, I'm so fat. Oh, I can't do this. You know, it's another thing where you can't overreact to that. We keep coming back to that. It's a big one. But you've got to be able to kind of blunt your emotional response to things a little bit. Channel your inner Vulcan, your inner Mr. Spock, rest in peace, Leonard Nimoy. The less of an emotional response you can have to things, and the more you can think about things analytically, the better off you will be. I'm not asking you to completely suppress all emotion and become a robot. I will say robots tend to do pretty well during contest prep, but that's a personality characteristic. You know, not everybody can do that. But learning how to look at things from more of an analytical point of view, and turn down the emotional response in the brain a little bit. So, you know, if you're stepping on the scale and logging your weights, not letting the number determine your worth or whether or not you're going to have a good day if you don't get a new prep low on the scale. You know, what that number is telling you is, you know, it's giving you a number, and that number is, you know, the relation of your body mass to the Earth's gravity. That's all it is. And there's a lot of things that go into that number. You know, you're made up of a lot of things. And the only thing that we're really concerned with tracking is your body fat tissue. So that is one thing that scale measures, but it also measures things that are more constant, you know, like muscle. And it measures things that are a little bit more fluid, like water, no pun intended, you know, muscle. So, You can't tell necessarily. I mean, if you go up a pound and a half in a day, I guarantee you didn't gain a pound. You didn't gain a pound and a half of fat in one day. You know, you're retaining water. It may be that your digestion is backed up a little bit, and it will self-regulate. So there's always reasons for that stuff. And the big thing is to understand that there are reasons for it and think about it analytically and just ask yourself the question, okay, I'm up a pound and a half on the scale today. Did I get that much fatter in a day? The answer is no, you didn't. So try to chill out a little bit, realistically. And looking at your pictures, don't overreact to those, but just look at them as what they are. It's a visual representation of your strengths and weaknesses and also your progress. So that is the best way to use that tool, is look at it, compare. I wouldn't necessarily compare pictures from week to week, but look at them over 3 or 4 week intervals. So take them weekly. But when you take this week's progress pictures, go and look back to the ones you took 3 or 4 weeks ago and compare them against those. And then when you take them next week, look back to the ones 3 to 4 weeks previous to those. So you're taking them every week, but comparing them over those, you know, roughly month-long intervals. Then you can really kind of see the progress. And any little variances that show up in your photos as far as like changes in lighting, changes in, you know, if you're wearing something different, which you shouldn't be, if you're in a different location, which you shouldn't be, all those things should be consistent. But it will help smooth out little variances that may look like changes in your physique, but aren't. So look at them over 3 or 4 week intervals and just be kind to yourself, and, you know, get a second opinion as well. You know, obviously your coach should be looking at those if you have them. If your significant other cares, have them take a look at them, see what they'll tell you, and try to recognize also if they're just trying to make you happy and blow smoke up your ass, or if they're being honest with you. The fourth don't. Remember, there's 5 of each of these, so we're getting close to the end here. The fourth don't of contest prep: don't do too many shows in a year. Don't do too many shows in a year. If you plan and you're like, all right, I'm paying $120 for my NPC card, so I'm going to do a show in March, in May, 2 in July, 1 in September, and then I'm going to close out with 1 in December. You're going to be in prep all fucking year. And that's going to be a miserable year, and you'll have some great photos to show for that, but you will want to kill yourself and probably a lot of other people by the end of that year, assuming you make it there alive. And you will be doing a number on your body as well. Your body does not want you to do that. So pick your spots. I would say if you're going to do multiple shows, it's smart to do them fairly close together. You know, you could do them on consecutive weeks. You could do them with a few weeks apart, but then give your body a break. Give yourself a chance to recover, a chance to do a little bit of a metabolic rebound, a chance to get your calories back up, take a little bit of a break from cardio, not stop doing it completely, but dial back on it. Give yourself time to grow, time to improve. If you're constantly in prep, you can't make improvements to your physique when you're in prep all the time and you're running a caloric deficit. So give your body a break. Let it experience the ebb and flow that is bodybuilding. It's not all contest prep all the time. It can't be. And if it is, you're going to get burnt out really fast before you really achieve anything close to your potential. The final do is ask for help. Whether that's a coach, your friend who's going to be a workout partner and push you along. If it's your significant other, your spouse, help with meal prep, kind of help, you know, maybe they're not competing, but help them see if they can help you kind of go along on the ride for you. Maybe they can, you know, get in shape a little bit too. If they share some of the same dietary principles you're following, maybe, you know, drag them to the gym with you if you don't think it'll be too much of a distraction. You know, don't feel like this has to be a solitary endeavor. For some people, it can be, and for some people, they prefer it that way. I'm putting myself in that category. I would just as soon never work out with anybody ever. I don't want a workout partner. I do just fine on my own. When you do tandem workouts, for me, they tend to slow me down. I like to move a little bit faster. I don't like getting stuck in conversations. I got to move. That's a personality type. For some people, though, going a little bit slower, taking a little bit more time, having that extra push behind you can be a huge help. Same thing, having somebody to kind of go along certain phases of the diet with you. Somebody that you meet and do cardio with, you know, somebody who will go on, you know, runs on the greenway or something like that with you for cardio, that can be helpful. So, you know, do ask for help, you know, seek out partners if it's something that seems appeal to you. Be aware of the potential problem of the pitfalls of having too many cooks in the kitchen, if you're familiar with the metaphor. So if you've got a coach and, you know, listen to them, and you will probably, you know, a lot of people, I would say probably women specifically, will notice, you know, as they get into contest prep mode and they start seeing changes in their physique, suddenly every guy in the gym is a contest prep expert and everybody has all kinds of ideas on everything that they should or shouldn't be doing with regards to their diet, their training, etc. So, you know, understand that everybody's got an opinion, but the only one that really matters is that of your coach, or your opinion if you are your own coach. So that doesn't mean, you know, don't bring up ideas. Like, say, hey, somebody was talking to me about XYZ. What do you think about that? I get those questions all the time, and I encourage those questions because it's a chance to learn. And I have opinions on pretty much everything. I don't claim to have a monopoly on correct opinions. You know, I mean, you know, like intermittent fasting, for example, I get that question all the time. What do you think about intermittent fasting? Well, for a multitude of reasons, I'm not a huge fan. That's not to say it's a completely worthless philosophy, but I'm not a huge fan of it. So, and you know, I detail all those reasons why. I won't get into them here, but there are plenty. So, don't let too many people into your kitchen, if you get my drift there. You know, seek consult from a select number of people, like a coach, opposing coach. Some people have, you know, both of those, and, you know, a workout partner, or they'll have somebody who coaches them on their diet. They will have opposing coach, and then they will meet with somebody in the gym for training sessions as well. Just, you know, make sure that everybody understands their role, keep them in their own little boxes. And if opinions are offered that are outside their realm of expertise, feel free to take those up with whoever the appropriate authority is. But try not to just arbitrarily listen to everybody and try and do everything that everybody says, because a lot of people are going to have opinions that aren't necessarily qualified to be dispersing those. The final don't of contest prep, and this is one that I find extremely important, and this is really a big picture quality of life kind of thing. Don't be a one-trick pony. Don't let bodybuilding be the only thing that you do. Be a well-rounded person. Be unique. Be your individual self and do interesting things. There is a lot of stuff in this world that has nothing to do with bodybuilding, and some things would be mutually exclusive. Like if you wanted to be a bodybuilder and the reigning champion of the Nathan's hot dog eating contest every year, we might consider those to be mutually exclusive. But if you know, there aren't many things that don't go well with bodybuilding. Bodybuilding is something that does encourage people to kind of just go into a little box and become kind of a hermit and tune out a lot of the rest of the outside world, because frankly, it's easier when you do that. But I would encourage everybody to embrace the challenge of bringing more things into your life and not living that hermit existence. You know, for example, for me, you know, I do this. I'm very passionate about bodybuilding. I'm lifting every day. I'm following the diet every day. I'm also a musician. So, you know, we have band practice at least once a week. We play gigs, we're out in bars, we're given free drinks. And, you know, sometimes that means saying no to free drinks. Oh my God, really? Yeah. And that's okay. You know, you go to parties, you know, social activity is part of life. And you know, there's no expectation if you go to a party that you've got to eat everything there. You know, if you can work it into your schedule so that you can, cool. All right. You know, when you're not on contest prep and you're trying to grow a little bit, you can get away with some extra calories. It's all right. But you know, if you're 6 weeks out from a show and you get invited to a Christmas party, well, I mean, you know, I wouldn't encourage anybody to not go. Just understand, you know, the challenge will be there. You're 6 weeks out from a show. You've set that as a priority. Don't fuck it up, but go to the party, have a good time, and just don't, you know, don't drink and don't eat the stuff that's there. You know, eat beforehand, eat afterwards, whatever. But don't avoid situations like that just because they are challenging. I always love the quote from JFK that said, you know, we do these things not because they are easy, but because they are hard. I might be paraphrasing a little bit there, but I absolutely love that quote. And bodybuilding is about the challenge and how we all accept that challenge as part of the unspoken agreement of participating in a show or just participating in the lifestyle here. So, all right, that wraps it up. That's everything, right? Looking at my outline here. Yeah, that's it. We covered everything. So, thank you for listening. I appreciate your time as always. Any feedback that you can offer is extremely valuable. Once again, I am on iTunes. You can also find me on the Google Play Store. If you go to my website, 5starphysique.com, there are all kinds of subscribe buttons there. You can email me directly, Darren@5starfitness.com. Until next time, probably next Friday, I'm thinking. I hope everyone has a great week, and send over your questions, comments, anything like that, and I'll be happy to hear from you.